Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back to episode 233 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. So happy you are joining us today for another fantastic interview with one of Magic's best players in the world. Twice a week, I bring on the top 8 of Grand Prix and the top 16 of Pro Tours, as well as any other community notables, to talk about their history with Magic and what they do that we're not. The goal is to bridge the gap between where we are and what the big guys are doing, what the pros are doing, how they prepare for events, and how they take down big events like Grand Prix and Pro Tours. So we have another great guest lined up today, but before we dive into that, I want to say thank you so much to the patrons for supporting the show. It's because of you that this is all possible, and I can't thank you enough. As part of my ongoing quest to give back to the patrons, I do a patron-exclusive giveaway each and every month, where one lucky patron will receive some sweet Magic swag provided by Paragon City Games, who is the other proud sponsor of the show. So if you are interested in becoming a patron of the show and making sure that interviews like this continue to come your way, as well as be considered for every future drawing, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. If becoming a regular patron is not your thing, but you still want to support the show somehow, then have you checked out the MTG Pro Tutor t-shirts? They are available. They're ready to go at mtgpro2.com/t-shirt. You can find men and women's styles and sizes, as well as two different styles, each sporting a unique phrase on the back. One of them says Hero Among Planeswalkers, and the other says Depart Every Plane Victorious. So you can pick the best one for you, find the size that works for you, and go ahead and check on out. It's all ready to go at mtgpro2.com/t-shirt. So thank you again to the patrons for supporting the show directly. I really hope you enjoyed the t-shirts. Go ahead and check those out. And a huge thank you to Paragon City Games. You can find them at ParagonCityGames.com, where you can check out how they do community building and what they have going on in the Utah area, as well as beyond in the greater Magic the Gathering community. So thank you, Paragon City Games and Prodigies. I encourage you to check them out. We had some great Grand Prix last weekend. I don't think I mentioned the three past guests that made the top 8 of the 2 Grand Prix. So we had Matt Severa, past guest of the show, did fantastic at GPDC, as well as Corey Baumeister. And then over in Turin, we had Simon Nielsen, who made it into the top 8 as well. So three past guests. Congratulations to all three of you. Absolutely love seeing you go off and do great things. It's just so cool. So cool. Well, I have nothing else to keep you from the great guests we have lined up. So let's bring them in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a Timmy Vorthos player who loves Eternal formats and had never made a Grand Prix Day 2 until he became the champion of GP Sao Paulo 2017. Coming to us from Indamoyagapa, Brazil, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, João Lilis. João, how are you doing today?
Hi, Sean. I'm very well, and I'm ready.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Sure.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies, if you want to connect with João, you can find him on, and I'm going to practice that name a lot. I apologize. I'm going to work on it really hard. But if you want to connect with him, you can get him on Facebook. We'll get him into the Facebook group. So he will be in the Pro Tutor Prodigy Facebook group. You can look him up there. You can connect with him, ask questions, and that will be the best way to get a hold of him. So, João, first thing is we'd love to learn a little bit about you outside of Magic. So are you born and raised in Indamoyagapa?
No, I'm actually from Lorena, it's a small town near Pindamonhangaba, and I came here for work.
Okay. What do you do for work?
I am a chemical engineer. I work at a pharmaceutical.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you like actually make pills, or you do research on them, or what's your role?
I actually work at quality control.
Okay.
Very neat. Pharmaceuticals.
So is there any overlap between that and Magic? Is there anything that you know, learn at work or that you do or at work that you get to do in Magic?
Well, actually, it kind of helps you about the engineering thing, about mathematics, you know, about statistics.
Very cool.
Most of it.
Some mathematics and statistics and running the numbers and considering options. And it's really neat. So did you grow up playing games, whether, you know, board games, card games, video games, or, you know, where did that come from? Your love of games?
Well, I'm a regular geek. You know, I was born watching animes and Japan things. And then I started to play at college, which is not your equivalent at college. It's high school. Mm-hmm. Here we call college. I saw some of my friends playing and I thought, oh, what are you playing? What's that? And then I started playing. And that was back in 2004.
So that's when you first started playing games or you first started playing Magic?
First time playing games at all.
Okay. Okay. Very cool. So what was your bridge into Magic? Tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards. What was that like?
Well, I was expelled from my classroom.
What?
For bad behavior. What? It was funny because that had never happened to me before. Mm-hmm. and it was not really my fault, but the teacher expelled me. So I was wandering through the school. Then I saw some friends playing cards and I get there and start asking about the game and then I kind of thought it was interesting. So I searched for it, bought some decks. It was Mirrodin.
Oh, wow.
Decks, the pre-starters, and start playing with them.
Wow. So you were expelled from class for bad behavior. We were just kind of wandering the halls and found some friends who were playing Magic. And that was it. Like, hey, what's this? And then you went off and got some Mirrodin starter packs. So that's pretty cool. That was your first set. Your first set was Mirrodin?
Yeah.
Cool.
Then I discovered that was Darksteel. The first set, but it was at Darksteel's.
Mm-hmm. Darksteel. Good stuff. What's been your favorite set?
Oh, it's kind of funny, but I really love Kamigawa.
Oh, good. That's cool. What about it did you like?
It was the first set that I got it a whole set. Because since I started on Darksteel, I was just buying some cards and stuff. And then I remember, then I found a local store in my city who was selling. I started playing some plays in the store, and then all the people was talking, hey, it's going to be a pre-release, what I don't even know what it was, but they are talking, and then they went, I didn't, and they came back with a lot of new cards, and I was amazed by those spirits who were indestructible and stuff, and I kind of loved the idea. So I decided to get all the cards of the collection.
Nice. So are you more a collector then?
Yeah, I'm really much more a collector than a player. Hmm. Now I collect foil cards.
Okay. Only,
but then I try to have four of each collection.
Wow. Dang, so you like to build a playset.
Yeah, but it's really hard. Just getting cards here and there, mm-hmm, and trying to get everything together.
Wow, that's really cool. So Kamigawa was the first set that you had one of each of the card. That's really cool. Do you have, what's one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card is Gifts Ungiven.
Oh, great. So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do?
You search for four cards with different names in your deck, show to your opponent and to a target opponent, and he or she chooses two of them. Those two are put in the graveyard, and the rest you put in your hand.
Love it. And why do you like that card?
I like the way it gives you options, and then you send these options to your opponent. You never know exactly what you're going to get with it, but it's really hard. It's an instant, so you do it at the end of your opponent's turn, and then you get to your turn with it. It's really hard to lose after you do it, because you're looking for everything you need.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really cool stuff you can do with that. Like, Gibson Givens says up to 4 cards. So I know people who, you know, they'll choose only 2 cards, both of which they want to go to the graveyard, and then, you know, then they'll like reanimate them or something like that. You know, so there's lots of cool things you can do.
Yeah, you can always bring Unburial Rites and Elesh-Marn.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then they both go to the graveyard, then boom. Now you have Unburial Rites in the graveyard. Exactly. So fun stuff. That's really neat. So came in a Mirrodin, your favorite set's Kamigawa, and you like Gifts Ungiven. Good stuff. So we mentioned that you are, you know, a Timmy Vorthos, you know, player, and you love Eternal Formats. You talked about how you like collecting and whatnot. So when you started getting into Magic to play it more and you know, be competitive, a little bit more competitive, because obviously you're going to Grand Prix and stuff like that, what was an early struggle that you faced and that you overcame?
Well, it was going to play a lot of rounds in one day and playing with people who are not your friends. You know, I was used to play at my local store with my friends. And we were playing to win, but it's never like that, you know. You have to win. You're just playing. It's a game. And if you win, if you lose, it's no deal. But then you start going to big tournaments and you start facing opponents who really want to win. See, and when they lost, they got not exactly furious, but they are not kind of not deal well with losing. Yeah. And I kind of thought it was, you know, it may not be the place to me.
Hmm. But so what did you do? How did you learn? Or yeah, how did you grow?
Well, I start principle. I learned about the rules of the game. I became a judge, and then I stopped being judge because I really like to play. But I really learn about the rules, and then I thought I can, you know, people cannot, how can I say that? They cannot use them against me, you know? I kind of was afraid at first, because it seems like if I don't shuffle my deck very well, someone can argue about that. Yep. And then I kind of try to learn what I can, what I cannot do, and that was helping. And after that, you kind of have to decide whether you are just going to play the game for fun or if you want something more. And I thought that, it's a great part of my life, so I want a little more.
What helped you come to that decision? You know, so you just said, it was a big part of my life. You wanted something more. What else went into that? Like, what made you go, you know, I really want to do this, you know, competitively and start going to bigger events? What did that look like?
It was because of the people of the store. Mm-hmm. They were getting their game improved, you know. Then a new player arrived and we cannot beat him because he was a really good player. And with him, our game have get better. And then, since your gaming is getting better and better, you kind of don't want just to go to at Friday's and play with the same people every day.
Yeah.
You want to know about different decks, different people, different ways to play. And that was what brought us together. And the local store get us together as a team. And then we started training and discussing decks, and then it kind of helped us all improve. And with us, the local store improves itself.
Yes. Yeah. Man, that's awesome.
That kind of decision.
That is so neat. It wasn't a solo thing, you know, like you keep saying we and us and how, you know, you all wanted to get out there and play new people and get those new experiences. And it's fun how you had a motivation, you know, somebody new came in and they were really good and they're always winning. And everyone's like, man, like, we want to get better. we want to be able to beat this person.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's like, you know, we don't want to play against the same people every week. You know, we want new people, new decks. And so you start going out and playing other places. And that's really neat to see that progression. And then, you know, here you are, like going to Grand Prix and taking it down. You know, that's great. And so, you know, normally we, you know, kind of talk about milestones along the way, like, you know, step ups that people have done leading up to their, you know, top eight, for example. But boom, you went all the way to the top. So was this your first Grand Prix, or I know it was your first day too, but how many Grand Prix have you been to?
5 Grand Prix.
5. And then this was your first day too, and you went all the way to first place.
Yeah. Awesome. Nobody was believing us as a team. We hoped to get, you know, top 64 or 32 if we get lucky.
Yeah.
And then I was there and I wasn't believing. They weren't believing. It was amazing. Really amazing.
Okay. So, I mean, let's just kind of dive into that a little bit. So it was a modern Grand Prix, right?
Yeah.
What deck did you play?
I played Bant Nightfall.
Okay. How did you choose that deck?
You know, they say modern players have their pet decks. And it was kind of that.
Okay.
The Bant Nightfall is my pet deck. And I love playing with it. Since I played Bant with Knight of the Reliquar since before Retreat to Coral Helm get on. So I always liked the idea of playing Mana Dark and then playing, skipping turn 2 to get business with. It can be the Knight. In the past, it was... I used to use the Geist of Sandtraft and swords, and you can play, and you have blue to get counterspell. So you go, skip your second turn, and then you protect what you have made. I like this kind of play.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Man, so clever. And so this was kind of your pet deck that you've been playing for a long time, you said, before some of the other pieces, you know, came together. So how did you prepare for the Grand Prix? Like, how much did you practice? What were you doing? What did it look like?
Well, at the beginning of the year, when I was already playing the deck, I got to, here in Brazil, we have a circuit with stars from all over the country, and after every 6 months, they have a final, which is called CLM. And then I came to the CLM and I made it to the top. So it was the first big tournament that I have won. And it was with this deck, with some other cards. And then I thought, well, the deck is playing well. And it's funny because people don't really know how to play against the deck most of the time. You know, they don't know how to play against the Knight of the Reliquary, which is an incredible card. It can make a lot of things. And I can get my toolbox with lands, which I liked the toolbox since the Gift is Ungiven time. You know, you play one off and you can bring in when you need it.
Yep.
So I continue playing the deck. I changed it a little bit. 2 weeks before the GP, we had another CLM, and I went to it with Bant Nightfall, but with a little difference. And I made 2-4 drop. I started 2-0 and then 4 losses in a row, and that was it. I was out, and I thought, man, maybe this deck is not, I need to change it. It's not okay anymore. Then I did it. I discussed it with my team. We practiced. We played 2 PPTQ. I don't know how to say PPTQ.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. The PPTQ. Yeah.
So I played. I made final on both. I lost on the final on both, but that was okay. The deck was, you know, it was playing. It was not a 2-4 drop. It was a good deck. So I made changes and decided that was time to put it to a real test. So it was the GP.
Yeah, excellent. So you mentioned you love the toolbox concept ever since Gifts Ungiven. And the toolbox are in this deck are the lands, because you can go get whatever you want with Knight of the Reliquary. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the toolbox? What are some of the tools, I guess, in your land lineup?
It's kind of sad because there are just three lands on the toolbox, but it really is a toolbox that works. I have Gavan Township.
Yeah.
For games that are going to go longer. Ghost Quieter, which is for some value, you can destroy a land of your choose, normally a Valakut or a Trompisi. But what it really does is getting Knight of the Reliquary, three more of power, which people doesn't think he's going to get. Imagine you have a 2/2 Knight of the Reliquary, which is unaffected by summon sickness. And your opponent tries to attack with Fatmat Seer. Mm-hmm. Then you can block, sack one land, he's 3/3, get your Ghost Quieter, sack it targeting one of your own lands, and then it's 5/5.
Oh, man.
Then, see, it's something that happens a lot. And that's why Ghost Quieter is one of the most important. And one that I like a lot, which is CGD Step.
Yeah.
You know, since you can untap with Knight of the Reliquary, it's really hard to kill it. Because you can always bring it protection.
Yeah, I like that Sigiri Step. That's pretty cool.
And you can protect your spell quellers too. So it's really useful.
That's cool. So why only one Sigiri Step?
Because they enter on the battlefield tapped. And that's really, you know, the worst beginning you can have is Sigiri Step, tap it, go. And it kind of happens much times when you used to. So I started using just one.
Got it. So let's see here. On the deck list that we have online on Wizard's site, it has three Thalia Heretic Cathar. But you were telling me that you actually have the other Thalia. Is that right?
Yeah. The Thalia actually was kind of, you know, the thing that made the deck really function at the first CLM, as I was saying. As I was saying, I like to go Mana Dark and then turn 3. But a lot of times you don't get your Mana Dark. You need to mulligan after, which is not really good. Or people can kill your Mana Dark. And that happens much more now that we have Fatal Push than before.
Yeah.
We need a second turn thing. You need second two drops. And I was thinking about which I can use. Before, I was using Spellskite and Kazali Pride Mage.
Right.
But I thought I really need something else. And then I was looking through my cards, and I saw it glows at me, Thalia. And then I thought, well, why not? Let's try. And it changed the deck incredibly. You know, it kind of made it hard to play your collected companies, but normally it is worse for your opponent than it is to you. So it's a great card. And your opponent kind of wants to deal with it. You know, since it hits the battlefield, he has to deal with it.
Yeah.
With most of modern decks.
It becomes like a lightning rod.
So it kind of protects it protects what's going to happen next.
That's cool.
You made it on turn 2, and then since your opponent has to deal with it, your 23 is free to do the real nice things of the day.
Yeah. Interesting. That's cool. So anybody who's going to go look up Joao's deck list on Wizards site, you can see just replace the Thalia's with the Guardian of Thraben and you should be good to go. So, man, so really cool. So yeah, that's great. You had this deck. You've been practicing with it. You did really well at one event and then a couple weeks before you did not do so well. And you're like, oh man, like what should I do? And you decide to take it anyways. And yeah, then you went all the way. So that's great. And, how many people are in your team?
There are four people.
Four people. And so you guys were hoping, hey, if we can get to the top 64, that'd be pretty cool. You know, top 32 if we're lucky. And then you went all the way. How did your other teammates do?
We had one. Actually, one didn't play.
Okay.
He decided to... He doesn't like Modern too much, so he decided to go on the side events. And the other three, we all made day two. And one of them made it top 64.
Nice. So you had a day two, a top 64, and the champion. That's pretty good. You know, that's really neat to, you know, to have that happen with your teammates. You know, that's fun. That's really fun. So what was it like for you to, what did it mean for you to, you know, make it into top eight and to win a Grand Prix? What did that feel like?
You know, when I realized that I could just go to two draws, two IDs. I can't believe what is going on. I got I'm going to play a pro tour. And I don't even have a passport. You know.
Oh my goodness.
Can you imagine that? Then I'm going to get a travel to another country to play with the best players in the world. You know, the people I'm riding, everything I'm reading everything they write.
And yes.
I think, man, that's the, he got all the reason, you know, if they say something, you believe it something, then I'm going to play with them. Wow.
Yeah.
What I'm doing here. You know, that sentiment. I don't belong here.
But
then I was there. And then they became the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the finals. And I was, man, what is going on?
Wow.
That was not for that I left my home. I was thinking, man, imagine I could make day two finally. And suddenly I'm there.
Wow. That's
incredible.
So cool.
For me, it was one of the most incredible experiences in my life.
Wow. So how did you handle, I mean, obviously well, but, you know, being on feature matches, because once you made it into the top eight, obviously you got featured and your final match was featured and everything. So what was that like? Like, what was it like to be on a feature match?
Actually, the feature match you say is like people recording the game, or because we didn't have the feature match, people recording the game and the stuff in this GP because of the GP Birmingham.
Oh, that's right. So it wasn't like the coverage team was there and, you know, you're live on Twitch or whatever. Okay. Got it.
So we didn't have it.
So it just felt like a normal match for you.
And it was not like a normal match because we had a separate place, mm-hmm. but people could watch. And then there were mountains of people watching. And that day one, I had a kind of this experience because at round eight, I was playing next to PV.
Nice.
Round seven.
Yeah.
So people were watching PV's game, but I was there at his side, so some of them couldn't look at him, so they were looking at my game. It was kind of that. But then at the top eight, there were everybody looking at that game. You know, that never happened before.
Wow. So, man, so you're going to a pro tour. That's pretty cool. Are you going to get your passport in time?
Yeah, actually, I get the response today, I could manage to change my Pro Tour to Bilbao. It's not going to be Albuquerque.
Okay.
Because I was not going to get my visa on time.
Okay. So you're deferring your invite to the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. And where is that next one going to be?
Bilbao, Spain.
In Spain. Wow. That's fun. So you're going to travel from Brazil to Spain to play in the Pro Tour. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the top of that, it's going to be modern. So.
Oh my. Hey, perfect. That's great. That's cool.
Yeah. I didn't even know it. So, you know, I didn't even know it, right? How those Pro Tours, how many Pro Tours we have in a year. I just know that when at our Pro Tour, we are all watching. That's the only thing.
I just know that when there's a Pro Tour, we all watch. That's great. So let's see. How many Pro Points do you have right now?
I have eight.
Eight.
My first
wow.
eight Pro Points.
Oh my goodness. Hey, that's a good start. You know, like, do you have other Grand Prix that you're going to go to? You're going to try and get more points this year? And
actually, this year, we have no one here in Brazil. We had one at the beginning of the year, but I couldn't make it because of my friend's wedding. And the next one in Brazil, I believe it's in the second half of the next year. But I pretend to go to Chile.
Okay.
The next year, March next year.
Yeah, I mean, with eight Pro points right at the beginning of the season, you know, maybe traveling to some of the other Grand Prix, and you know, you can make a run for silver at least, if not Player of the Year.
Which was going to be the dream, but I still have to work.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
Cannot afford to be a pro player, but maybe after the Pro Tour, maybe.
Yeah, because you're gonna get 3 points just for going to the Pro Tour, so that already puts you at 11. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. And then depending on how well you do there, you know, you'll get more Pro Points. And then there's, you know, you'll have Brazilian Nationals, and if you travel to any other Grand Prix, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to have Nationals in a month, so mm-hmm. I could get
a couple Pro Points.
I don't know, bronze in English.
Yeah, bronze.
It's bronze.
Yeah.
Bronze. Oh, I could make it to the bronze.
Yeah, man, that is so fun. You know, just to hear how awestruck you are and how excited you are, and that's great. How are you going to prepare? You know, because that's a big thing for first time Pro Tour players is you know, who are you going to play with and how are you going to prepare? What is your plan for that?
Well, I intend to take all the spider webs from my mall account and start training there.
There you go.
With my team, I'm going to play with my team. The owner of the store is going to have us opening all the boxes he's going to sell to practice draft. And then I'm going to try it on mall too. Cause now I really need to play it a lot. Because I'm not used to play drafts, so it's the time.
Are you going to link up with other players who are qualified for the Pro Tour and practice with them too?
Well, this I'm not really sure, because it's where I live. It's far from every other player who has the invitation, so I'm not sure yet.
So maybe starting some... like a group online or something like that, you know, get to reach out.
Actually, there's another player.
Oh, yeah?
Who had made top 8, who was just like me. It's Jean Sato, who was his first day 2.
Wow.
And he was trying to change to Bilbao too, because he was exactly like me. He doesn't even have a passport. So I imagine I could discuss a lot with him.
Perfect.
Because we are at the same point now.
Yeah. Oh, that is so fun. So, man, so this has been what a cool, you know, story and how you got there. And that's just really neat. And I would love to learn more about like your ups and downs along the way. So as you have played Magic, what has been your worst Magic moment? Was there a time in your history that was just really hard for you, or that you learned from? Like, what's been your worst Magic moment?
Well, my worst math moment was around between the Shadowmoor and Alara, where nobody in my region was playing. Everybody has stopped playing for some reason or the other, and I was the only one playing. So since I was the only one playing, I was playing with no one. So I just kept buying foil cards and waiting for it to get back. Which happened at Zendikar's, which was, Zendikar's propaganda, and then all got everything, get magic again here on the interior of São Paulo, in the small towns of São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst thing was that, not playing it. The worst thing about playing in my life playing Magic was not playing it.
Yeah.
The time I couldn't have anyone to play against.
Wow. Where did you get your cards?
On the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. So there wasn't any local store or anything?
No. Yeah. Our local store opened at, which was the second set on Innistrad block.
Oh, really?
The first Innistrad block. It was, I don't remember the name.
Dark Ascension.
But the store, Dark Ascension, yeah. The store that we actually play now opened at this time. The other store where I was playing at the beginning closed before Time Spiral was launched. So this time we hadn't stores, but we had people playing. Then we had nothing for a while. That was really hard. But now it's amazing.
Yeah. So the hardest time was not having anyone to play with. So that, a lonely period where you were the only active Magic player and had to get your cards online and not really having anybody local. So, and the interest just came back with Zendikar because it was, a good set. And so people kind of caught back onto it.
Yeah, it was a good set. They had the expeditions. I don't remember where. After every 20 bucks, you get an old.
Oh yeah.
And they, because who doesn't love lands?
right.
Lands are the sweetest thing you can ever imagine.
Yeah, that's fun. That's really cool. So your low is then, and your high is obviously, become the champion of Grand Prix Sao Paulo. That's really, really cool that you've gone on that journey. Your low being no one to play with, your high being taking down a big event. That's really neat. And we've talked about how you prepared for this event. You have your modern pet deck that you've been practicing and playing with, and that's really neat. And man, this is really cool to hear your journey. So you've played a lot of Magic, obviously, and you've watched other people play. What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Oh, that's a hard question. You mean normally people, right? Not the people I've seen on the internet.
Yeah, well, in your experience, so as you play Magic, what's been a mistake that you've noticed people play or make when they play?
I believe that when you see people not getting full value of their spells and creatures, I guess is that that's one of the worst things I see people doing at a regular and even at GP level. For example, it's your turn. It's not your turn yet. On the pass of your opponent's turn, on your opponent's first turn, you don't have a land on play yet, and people go and cycle I don't know in English the name of the card. That card that you cycle for two life and then street rate.
Yeah.
You could wait, draw your card, and see if that's really the play you want. You could, obviously you are going to do that 99% of the time, but you could wait. I think the worst thing that people do is not waiting for to get all the value you can from your spells and creatures.
Hmm. So how can we avoid that?
See, I believe it's to really know what you're doing, what people could do that would make it worse or not.
Yeah.
You know, knowing the field. Because for us, in that example, there's nothing that a player could do that would impede you to do that. You know, we don't have stifle, for example. So you could do whatever you want. At
the
same
true.
Time,
yeah.
It kind of may, if you are expecting the, I don't know, the new card, you know, that had a stifle effect, nimble something, three by one flying that you could cycle, and when you cycle, you could stifle something.
Okay, yeah.
You know, since you're not expecting that, you're not expecting a stifle, you're not expecting nothing of that, so you can wait, and you should wait.
Mm-hmm.
And people kind of don't use that time, you know?
Yeah, interesting.
Most of the times it doesn't make any difference, but it's like, I don't know if you accompany PV's articles, but he calls it the tiny edges.
Yeah,
you know, these tiny edges, I believe that they are what most people doesn't respect, you know? And I think you can get real value from that.
Yeah, I love that. Those tiny edges. And in this particular case, you know, waiting, because there's nothing that stops you from doing that. So you can draw, see what you get, and then, you know, cycle that later. Or, you know, maybe your opponent messes up and they try to, you know, destroy it with a spell, and then you can cycle in response, and then you just waste it with their spell. You know, like, yeah, waiting to get the maximum value. Like, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to somewhere else in your life, Joao?
I believe that is a good play. A good play is when you maximize your chances to win. Not exactly that play that makes you win. I believe that it can go through your life, you know. You have to make choices, thinking about what can maximize you getting a win, you getting what you want, and not just, you know, thinking about, oh man, that's not what I should do, but I did and it worked it. So it worked out. That's not how you have to think, not in Magic, not in your life, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to always do what can maximize you having what you want.
Exactly. Like you said, maximizing your chances of winning. It doesn't mean that you're going to win. It's not the thing that's going to, you know, guarantee that you win, but it's going to give you the best chance, you know, of winning. And that's really the best that you can do, is you can set yourself up to take those chances, to maximize your chances to win in Magic and in life, and understand, hey, once I set myself up to have the best possible chance, that's all I can do, you know. And then you play it out in Magic. Every turn you evaluate and you make that best chance, that best decision. And you do the same thing in life, and understand that there are things outside of your control that may, you know, result in a different outcome than what you wanted. And sometimes you win, you know, in Magic you'll win, and in life you'll get the goal that you wanted. And sometimes you don't. But all you can do is control what you can control and set yourself up for the best chance to win. So I think that's very profound. I think that's really cool.
Exactly.
And I love that we can draw these things from, you know, from a game and then take them into our life. And there's some really, you know, deep lessons there. So that's awesome. That's really cool. Thank you for sharing. Wow. So this has been great. I've loved, you know, our conversation, learning about you and what you do and how you do it, and just hearing your experience of, you know, winning a Grand Prix. That's so exciting. And we love watching past guests go on and continue to improve and do great things. And so we heard a little bit about the events you have coming up, you know, maybe Grand Prix Chile, you know, the Pro Tour in Bilbao and you know, Nationals. So keep that up, you know, keep going and playing Magic and inspiring players with, you know, with your humility and your story, and we absolutely love it. So I do want to remind the Prodigies, hey, if you want to connect with Joao, you can do so in the Facebook group. We're going to add him there so you can join the group and tag him in a post, and that'll be a great place to, you know, ask him about his deck or say thanks for being on the show and just get to know him better. So really good player here. So, Joe, as we wrap things up, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something that you've already said that you want to tell us again and remind us, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
Well, I want to tell people who are starting to play, you know, who are having fun with the game and all, and go to great tournaments, you know. You may win, you may not, but it's fun. You know a lot of people. You learn a lot from the game, and it can happen to you what happened to me, you know. You never know. It's not because you are not a great player or whatever. You cannot win. It could be your day, like it was mine. It could be ours. So do not miss those great tournaments. It's a really, really fun game, and you could get a lot of things from it. So that's it. Go and play.
Love it. Joe, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. You're starting to make a name for yourself and work your way up. And that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your time with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you, Sean, for having me.
And episode 233 is a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. As always, you can find the show notes over at mtgprotutor.com/Joa Lilis. That's JOAOLELIS, Joa Lilis. So that was so fun to have an international player on the show. I always love hearing their accents and then hearing their stories and learn that our experience with Magic is unique, but there are a lot of similarities no matter where we are in the world. How we came into the game, some of the mistakes we make early on. It doesn't matter where you're from, whether it's Brazil or America or Germany or Switzerland. It doesn't matter where you're from. Your introduction to the game and those early stories tie us together because we oftentimes have similar touch points with the early parts of the game. So that was so cool. Joel, thank you so much again for coming onto the show. Absolutely loved having you. Good luck in the rest of your Magic endeavors. And before we close out, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to the patrons who make all this possible and to Paragon City Games for their support as well. If you haven't yet, go and check out the t-shirts at mtgpro2.com/t-shirt, where you can get your favorite sign-off phrase on the back, either Hero Among Planeswalkers or Depart Every Plane Victorious. And there's still a few men and women sizes and styles left, so go check those out. Thanks again so much for joining me today. Can't wait until next time. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.